Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction tribe? It's one of those days that the days are long and the years are short. And we're going to talk through the evolution where I'm sitting here looking out at my experience center of my amazing window and door company in my new podcast studio, looking at Charlie Chupp and Matt McMullen. In this podcast here today, Charlie walked in. He's like, man, I just love coming in here. Like the vibe, you always have all this new stuff going on. And boy, do we have a lot of new stuff going on to talk with you about today. And the main message we're going to talk about is, how and why would you build a system-built factory? And tribe, the future of construction is now. It's right in front of us. The book is being recreated, and we're going to talk about that with the people that are actually doing this to blend on-site and off-site construction. And we're not going to talk just about old-school MF principles, and Matt's going to talk about MF next, but we get to do that with Charlie Chupp, who is the founder and the CEO of Fading West. And his story is super cool. But to go all the way back to the beginning, like I said, I'm sitting here today recording this podcast. And these moments of time that I think are important in these global and timeless fireside chats. And I hope this is one of those we look back and say on those trigger points how we get here today. So I'm recording this March 25th of 2022 at 9:31 a.m. We have so many great podcasts in the can. I don't know when Scotty and my awesome team is going to make this thing go live, but we're doing all this work built around episode 250 that's titled The System Build Lifestyle Reboot and talking through the evolution of the system build lifestyle. And I vividly remember it was February 25th of 2020, and I was in the back of the room. And credit to Audrey Grubesic, who jumped into this industry full force and was just an ultimate connector. And her platform of Offsite Dirt we're huge fans of. And we came in, and it was this team that Charlie and a few of his team members walked in, and they just said, "We're going to talk about how the future of construction should go." And we're going to unpack that today of the different moving parts of how cool is that a few years later, they did it. And boy, did they do it. So without further ado, Matt, welcome back as my guest co-host. And you were at that presentation, and that's why I wanted you to be here today. You were at the factory with me a few weeks ago where we went down and toured this thing when it was done. Man, those MF people are after it that we call system build lifestyle, right?
Yeah, you know, it's great. It feels like we kind of came through the wormhole, you know? It was pre-pandemic when Charlie and his crew came down. And it was Charlie and John and a few other people that were chatting. And it was one of those things where I invited a developer, a multifamily, a developer in affordable housing who had no idea what modular was. And he was absolutely blown away.
What's modular?
There's that M word, man. I'm going to use it now. But it's one of those things where Mike Langan of ComCap Management came and said, man, that just blew me away. He goes, just, you know, Charlie's presentation, and it's something that we really should look into because they have been doing stick built for affordable up and down the Front Range. So happy to be in the studio with you, man, and to chat with Charlie.
Awesome. Well, we'll begin with the end in mind here with the speed round. But Charlie, like, it was all the stuff on your plate. Like, thank you for coming in and sharing your story with the Art of Construction tribe. You ready to do this?
You bet I am. Thanks for having me, guys. This is great.
All right. What's your favorite beverage?
I feel like this may be the most important part of the whole podcast.
That's why it's the first question every time.
I'm going to go with maybe something that sounds a little bougie, but a Spanish red wine like a Rioja is probably my favorite.
Wow.
Drink.
That is exotic.
It's exotic, right? It makes me sound way more cultured than maybe is realistic.
I can't wait to hear the next answer.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know what the answer is next. Let's see.
Well, with that glass of wine, what's the favorite place you have traveled?
You know, I'm going to go with probably the Cotswolds outside of London.
I've never heard of that.
Gosh, this is sounding really bougie still, right? I'm really pretty down to earth. I don't know. But yeah, outside of London, the countryside.
Give us one story from that.
Oh, yeah. So a couple years ago, I'm really into motorcycling, and that which will be part of my next answer. And a friend of mine and I flew to London on a Friday afternoon and rented big BMW motorcycles. And drove out of London in 5 o'clock Friday traffic on the wrong side of the road, going through turnabouts where I don't even know the laws on motorcycles we'd never ridden before. It is a miracle we survived, but ended up going up through the Cotswolds and out in the countryside, and it was an amazing trip.
I love that. Matt, you referenced how, you know, kind of pre and maybe we're to the end of COVID. Who knows the new norm coming out of this that we're all trying to figure out as we rewrite the book on Art of Construction and System Build Lifestyle. But Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights, have you read that?
I've downloaded it. I haven't listened to it yet.
So his story of him and his guys on their motorcycle trip, dude, it's a must listen. Don't read it because Matthew McConaughey, all right. Bumper sticker, it's fantastic. And his story, if you're into that, it's mind-blowing on his motorcycle trip.
Nice.
But what do you like to do outside of what we're going to talk about next?
You know, I grew up in Florida and then moved to Colorado about 10 years ago. And probably my favorite thing is just everybody talks about the outdoors here. So sure. Anything outdoors. We live out in Buena Vista, so we've got the Arkansas River. My sons and I do a lot of like river surfing, which is something I never surfed in Florida, but I moved to Colorado and now I'm a surfer.
There you go.
It's kind of weird.
That's funny you say that. A good friend of mine moved from out there and lives in BV, and he was a big surfer in California. He's like, I like surfing here more. I'm like, that's ironic.
Crazy.
Like how that you kind of have this little culture of these people that are out there, and you made some really neat spots.
Oh, it's incredible.
To do that.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think it's the lack of sharks in Barracuda that make river surfing way better.
100% agree.
The jellyfish.
It's a huge part that's of why awesome. I moved to Colorado is there are no sharks in Colorado.
Come on. Well, Charlie, what is the story that led you to being the founder CEO for Fading West?
Yeah, that's a big question. You know, I had no intention of ever getting into construction or development. It was something that I grew up hearing about but never being a part of. I started in manufacturing and I ended up moving out to Colorado for a different career. But then really a friend of mine was a realtor in Buena Vista, and he had just done a big presentation to the Board of Trustees about the impact that the lack of affordable housing was having on the town of BV, and just a little town of BV, which is like 2,800 people. And so he knew my background in manufacturing and kind of lean or Toyota production systems. And he pulled me aside one day and said, hey, I've got this big piece of land that's the bank is literally willing to give away. It's zoned high density residential. Is there any way you could figure out how to create an attainable for sale unit? Mm. I was like, what do you even mean by attainable? Like, what is attainable in your mind? And he's like, well, it's for somebody making between 80 and 120% of the area median income that they could afford a great home and establish themselves in these communities. And that kind of started the whole journey of how do you create a great home for the workforce in Colorado?
Awesome. Well, before that, I want you to tell the story of the evolution of Load King.
Hmm. Yeah. So Load King is my granddad started this company back in the early 60s. And it was a supermarket equipment company. And he had just retired from Winn-Dixie, if you're familiar with old Winn-Dixie. Yeah. At one point, they were the largest grocer in the world. But he retired from Winn-Dixie and started building supermarket equipment and selling it back to his old friends at Winn-Dixie. So Load King started as a supermarket equipment company. And I had to work there every summer growing up and swore when I graduated from college I would never, ever work there again. And of course, ended up working there for 20 years and loved it. Got to be CEO for about 12 years, and we transitioned away from supermarket into this idea of creating turnkey store packages. And Starbucks was our biggest client. We got to work with them for many years, and they're an amazing expansion that they did back in, 2000. They started doing licensed stores, so not just standalone stores, but the airports and supermarkets, and the demand was just incredible. So we started looking at bringing in more efficiency. And Toyota back then would actually do free consulting. You could actually apply to Toyota, and they would come and teach you their principles of manufacturing. So that's where I fell in love with manufacturing and got to be a part of that, and learned a tremendous amount there.
All right. So now let's fast forward to a couple weeks ago. A wonderful Colorado snowstorm. We were determined. I was so jazzed from Charlie's conceptual presentation to this finished factory. And so we're driving down in the snowstorm and brought a few of our Art of Construction team members to meet with Charlie's team and get a tour of the plant. And it's one of those proud moments that I want to celebrate today of like, he did it. Like, and his team is so passionate about what they're doing. And they don't know everything about construction. Secret, none of us know everything about construction, never will know everything about construction. And of all the things that when I spent the day with Charlie's team at Fading West touring the new factory, there was a story that just totally stuck out that I got to tell the tribe. So we're walking through there, and it's a startup, right? And they're different moving parts, and they're talking through figuring this out, doing this. And Matt is over there in the corner and showing floors and this bearing and all this stuff. And they're just like geeking out on all this cool stuff. And we walk into one of these units, and the guy that's given us the tour, one of the tour guides that runs the plant, he's like, check out that electrical panel. And we walk over to the electrical panel, and we're like, man, that must have been one of their top-notch people that did that. That thing is beautiful. And of course, I was the one that said that. Like, man, you must know what you're doing to be able to make that thing so perfect. He goes, huh. She points over, see that girl over there? She did that. And I'm like, And he stops, and he looks at us all, and she goes, she's only worked here for 2.5 weeks. That had to be like someone that really, like her was the first thing. 2.5 weeks was the second thing. And I said, well, so is she like a master electrician? No. She's never done electrical before. Now I'm really like, well, what did she do before she came to work here 2.5 weeks ago? Her, 2.5 weeks ago, never done electrical. What did she do? She braided hair. And that was the mic drop moment when I was like, when you take chances, and it's not about chances on systems, it's chances on people, and change the status quo, I was like, I was all in on the rest of the day and so jazzed for this podcast because Charlie, the founder of that, was not on the tour. It was his team that's executing the vision. And as a visionary leader of the Art of Construction, that's where we get to bring these origin stories in. But you have to stop and think about why we do what we do and what we're out here to solve, right? As the Art of Construction, to build better buildings. And you tie that into, if you go back and listen to all these different packaged stories around system build lifestyle, like show 254 of plug-and-play electrical systems, where we talk about FireWire that never became a thing because USB ended up being the better thing that he worked at Apple and talked about how you're always just pushing this forward to now launching a couple company called Domatic about the future of how 90% of the house can be ran with 16-gauge wire that's much safer, that matches into a mainframe. So these riches in the niches, but Charlie went into the full bore factory, built a whole factory. And his story is coming from tied in with Load King, but not boots on the ground construction. So Matt, I want to turn it over, and we're all super excited to hear your conversation with Charlie around talking through a lean production system that is much probably easier said than done, right, Charlie?
Oh yeah. Sounds easy. We'll make it sound easy.
Yeah, so the Lean Thinking was a book that like really influenced me when I started to read about it, and where it really came out of was the automotive industry. And GM was using a push system and Toyota was using a pull system. And all of a sudden, Toyota started smoking GM and all the American-made manufacturers. And so it's James Womack and Daniel Jones actually went in and created this thing. So if you go back and you listen to AOC Show 83, that was the first time that I really got to interface with Devin and was about removing the Muda from your system and lean thinking. And Muda is like kind of mud or crap, you know, and just getting all that fat out of the way. And when we went to Charlie's presentation and Charlie started to talk about lean thinking principles, like my face lit up, you know, because I was like, wow, here's a guy who really understands it. So can you talk a little bit about how your factory's laid out and how you've used lean thinking with, you know, sort of a pool system for housing within your factory?
Yeah, this is where I can geek out for just about as long as you want to. I'm kind of the geek that watches like factory YouTube videos and studies like inventory control systems, which is I think everybody
that is actually the sexy stuff where you actually make this thing called money.
Right. It's very important. But yeah, so when we looked, you know, when we started thinking about how do you create a product. And that's the way we really approach our whole product line is not just housing. It's the productization of housing. And so as you look at product development, you're really thinking about lots of different components of efficiency. And Muda, or what we would call waste, is the idea that you're trying to eliminate waste through the entire value stream, the whole process of delivering a home. And that starts with the product development. It goes through our factory, but then it ends up at a site and it has to be set and stitched and finished and turned over to a customer. And so we at Fading West really think about all of those components, because it's not just having an efficient factory, it's having an efficient delivery of housing. And that's what we think about. So as we started approaching just the design of a factory, typically a factory might be one line and it's all in just a shotgun approach. It's just one line straight down the right down the factory. And as we started looking at it, lean really thinks about more cellular U-shaped assembly lines, because in a U-shape, you can see each stage in the process from almost any stage in the process. And so if you walk through our factory, that's what it looks like. It's a big U. And it's great because it's easy to see what's going on. It's easy transfer of information. And it's something we're still working on every day and trying to figure all the details out, but it's a pretty fun experiment for sure.
Can you talk a little bit, because I think, you know, I noticed that, you know, sort of the hole of the donut, right? So that's where you guys have a mezz level and you've got supplying that's happening from lower level and also upper level, but you have, I'll call them whiteboards that are at the end of the factory as you're coming around the turn, and there are specific things on there. And, you know, and I was Mrs. Kravitz in Bewitched, right? And I was the one who got kind of nosy and went over to your board and was looking and trying to see what the issues were. Can you talk a little bit about how you track that? Because there was some stuff where you're like, okay, we're off here and we're on here. Because I thought that was fascinating, because your people were gathered around those boards, right? Looking at their report card.
Right. Yeah, we think about three things that are critical for our company is SQV, safety, quality, and velocity. So safety first, always. I always do orientations with our staff when they first come on and spend a lot of time on the idea of safety. Essentially, a manufacturing facility is safer than a construction site for sure, but there's still a lot of stuff moving around, a lot of heavy stuff flying overhead. Obviously, quality, but then velocity is a big part of what we think about as well, because the factory is each station. We have 16 stations throughout that factory, and each station has to rotate at the same time. And that velocity is not just how fast you can get a box out; it's how fast every station is coordinated. And it's a big challenge. That's what we're working on every day. Yeah,
yeah. You're only as slow, because we did see, and we'll talk about that later. We won't call it challenges. We'll call it surprises and opportunities. But we did see a couple of open stations, and you can share that with us later of why that had occurred. But that's one of the questions that Devin and I asked is, when things are sitting there, man, you know, what is that burn rate? You know, and I don't expect you to give us the right number, but truly from a big 30,000 foot view, what's that burn rate when you've got a station that's open and sitting there for other reasons?
When they're all linked.
Yeah, right. When they're all linked.
Right. They're all interdependent on each other. So just because you're successful in one station doesn't make you successful. And it's a different philosophy that you have to teach throughout the organization. And each station has to understand that when they, we can get into this, but the station that finishes their work early and then starts working on the unit in the station before them doing their work is not actually helping. They need to go to the slowest station and help them, because just creating another big hole in the line is not efficient.
It remind me a little of my background in cross country, right? Where you have seven guys run, five count. Your fifth guy is the guy who's crucial.
Perfect.
Because you can be, you know, you can win the race, but the fifth guy, if he's having a bad day, that's why everybody, as soon as they finish, they run down and they're yelling for the fifth guy. Hey, you got to pick people off.
There you go. That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All got to be rowing in the same direction. So I'm really curious, as I've been kind of giving when I teed this thing up, of these different moments in time, and boy, the days, some days can be long and the years are short, right? I think about, like, at the end of this recording, you know, I call it the full life perspective, and we do a whole thing that I call the time relationship chart, and I put it on there for my daughter. I said, well, we got to get her to Disney as soon as when can she potentially remember Disney? And I was like, what's that, 4 or 5? And I went to my wife, and she's like, well, no, then we're going to have to go twice, because she may remember, she may not go. And I say that as, like, timing is everything, is that, like, it's, you have to have these celebration days and these hard days to get to where you're going, to where after this recording, I get to fly with my wife and daughter to Disney and go to the happiest place on earth and spend a few days doing that. And try to take time to work on you and celebrate that. But I'm really curious, Charlie, and talk about the evolution of why you did a systems built factory. Because when we got to go down there in the snowstorm, and we were cold, but I warmed up quickly when your passion came out about the farm and what you did with the farm. But when was that moment you knew you needed to build a system built factory?
Yeah, I always say we stumbled into this industry. There was no, like, master strategic plan to create a modular offsite systems built factory. It was the fact that when we got into the farm was our first development, and it was testing out this integrated model of using offsite construction with our own construction team, and trying to hit a price point where the workforce in our community could actually afford a home. And so as we started doing that, and the business model was successful, and we were hitting our price points, and we were seeing local workforce families start moving in and seeing this community development develop, we had all these other communities were starting to come and wanting to visit and saying, hey, this is something that our community needs as well. And how can you do this for us in Telluride or Summit County or any of these communities that are just dying for affordable housing? And as we got into it, we're like, okay, well, this might be more than just one project. This is something that might be needed across the state.
And you did it right in the heart of where it's happening,
right,
too.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, if you put your finger right in the middle of Colorado, you're covering Buena Vista, which was not a strategic choice, just very lucky. So as we started looking at it, just being from a background of manufacturing and product development and design, and also I sold probably the first 60 homes. So I interacted with the buyers, and I could understand what they were looking for and the families and what their needs were. And so we're like, gosh, we want to control the product. We want to control the quality of it. And we really have to control the output and the capacity constraints that we're facing. So I was riding with a friend of mine. We were coming back from a presentation in Gunnison, where we were talking to the town of Gunnison about an affordable project. And I was like, man, he actually said it. He's like, hey, Charlie, have you thought about building a factory? I was like, I don't want to be a modular manufacturer. I just want to be a developer. He's like, no, I think you could do this better. I was like, all right. So that was 3 years ago. And we're like, okay, let's figure out how to do this. And that's where it was.
We loved it when we went down there. Obviously, there weren't a lot of people out there because it was snowing like a MF. But what was cool is the people that
It wasn't snowing in the modular factory we call System Built Lifestyle, though.
Yeah, it wasn't snowing in there. In fact, I asked one of your guys, I'm like, because this guy had been in the trades, I said, don't you wish you were outside building today? He's like, nope, never going back to that again. But, you know, when we walked through the farm and we're kind of cruising around, you know, there were people with kids, and, you know, there was somebody from the sheriff's department there, which always makes Devin and I nervous, and we kind of steered clear of them, but that's for another podcast. But it was pretty cool, some of the diversity that we saw of the folks that you have living in that community, which tells me you're really servicing that, you know, 80 to 120% AMI and maybe even lower than that as well, too. So,
well, you know, that's also the fun part of, you know, our mission statement. We talk about high quality, architecturally interesting, and diverse communities, because on our development team, you know, we're going and finding land and trying to create these communities. And, you know, a lot of the fun of that was saying, how do you create a neighborhood through land planning and product design? And so at the farm, you know, even though it's probably the most affordable new home you can build in Colorado that I know of, there's like 60% of the units are townhomes, 30% are kind of a step up from townhomes into a smaller detached units, and then 10% more expensive houses. So it's really important to have diversity in a community. And I think that's, we're not just building low cost parts of town or the poor part of town. We want thriving communities as well. So
yeah, there was really obvious there was some verticality within your development where people could aspire to move up to a bigger unit or whatever once they reached that point in their career and their salary,
right,
that they could do that,
because and their family grows and their lifestyle changes. And yeah,
absolutely. Let me just talk with you a little bit about, now that you have the modular factory, systems built factory, even though you were like Bill Hurt, you know, in William Hurt and the Accidental Tourist, and that's kind of how you got there. But what are some of the biggest, you know, challenges, surprises, and opportunities with getting a modular out of a modular factory? What are some of the things that you found out that you're actually building it yourself versus getting it from a third party that you're working with as a developer?
You know, one of the surprises was, if you take a step back and look at the product itself, the home itself, it is not a complicated project process to build a home. I mean, we're not building electronics. We're building a pretty basic product at the end of the day. I think the biggest surprise we had was that the entire construction industry is not used to the delivery and the rigor required to maintain the velocity of a manufacturing facility. And I think that was one of the surprises, that we probably should have spent more time with our suppliers and really worked with them as an integral part to our delivery and product development. And so that was probably one of the bigger surprises. I think the other one is understanding from an architectural drawing standpoint, the difference between what is needed to build a home from an architectural standpoint and what is needed to manufacture a product. And the architectural drawings don't translate very well to a manufacturing data requirement.
Yeah, it's one of the things, I'll dive in a little bit on that. It's one of the things we've discovered on the AOC architectural services side as we've doing modular. And, you know, a lot of our modular is high-end custom homes. But really understanding, yeah, the difference between the architectural permit set that gets permitted by the county and then the production set for the factory that goes to the state housing division. You know, and state of Colorado housing division, I think, is a whole other story that we could talk to, just sort of the how that works with inspectors and stuff like that, because it is different than a regular county on-site built process. What are some of the strategies that you've looked at? And I throw out, what we've done is we've actually, you know, we'll do the overall plan for the entire house, but on the line, they don't really care about that, right? Other than knowing that things are aligning and that there's crossover amongst, you know, plumbing and water lines and electrical and things like that. So we started to do modular plans where it's by module. And then a lot of times what we'll see on the production line, they just have those module plans because that's really all they care about. They're building one box at a time.
Wait, it doesn't matter about the landscaping and the deck to build a box?
No,
it's surprisingly, it's, right?
It's architectural.
But that Jenga box, it doesn't matter if you put, does it matter where you put it on the property and how they stack?
Yeah. So we call it architectural Jenga, right? Is what we're doing is like, you're trying to disguise the fact that it's modular and that boxes are being stacked. So you're interlocking them. You're allowing vertical penetrations that come up through for two story spaces and stuff like that. But,
I just have to stop. Like, that's where you talked about the complexities of the manufacturers and the plans to the finished product when you're doing architectural Jenga and stacking this stuff. It's just a very different critical path of these 16 stations all working together to a finished product.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's the level of detail that a plumber needs at a workstation if they're not a master plumber. Typically, you'd build a house and the plumber would come in and plumb it, right? Well, now he's having to plumb it independently of all the other boxes, and this is, and that's the challenge, is can you standardize that process to the point where it is a manufacturing process, not requiring a master plumber to show up and plumb your boxes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we talked about that a little bit here, Charlie, where, you know, we're one of the beautiful things about AOC Architectural Services is we're actually out doing it, right? We're not just talking heads on a podcast talking about theory, right? It's like you're professoring in college. You know, there always used to be the thing of those who do, or those who can do and those who don't teach. Here we're trying to blend those things together, right? Where we're going out, we're actually dealing with the crane set guys and the set and stitch guys and all that stuff, and really understanding Department of Transportation rules and how long can you make something, and how do you get a specific look when you're limited to X from the face of a stud for an overhang. But can you talk about your designs and your system built structures? What are some of the critical components that you're looking at as developer and overall visionary for, and I wouldn't call it fading west, it's emerging west, right? Because you guys are like, you're not fading into the sunset, you guys are smoking it and coming out and becoming big. Can you talk a little bit about that? What are some of the things that you think about when you're looking at the design and you're coming up with a new model that's going through your system built factory?
Yeah, that's another great question. The way we approach our product line is much the same way an automotive manufacturer would look at their product line. So think about Toyota. They're building a Corolla and a Camry, but a Corolla is designed for a specific market with specific needs and a specific price point, right? Camry, same thing. No one builds a custom Camry, not at that price point. And so when we look at our housing and our product development, we think about who are the families and who are the homeowners that we're targeting with this product. So we think about our most affordable, most efficient unit that we can build for a family is for us a Chavano, which is an 18 by 38, two-story home, 1,320 square feet, three bedroom, three bath. But it's designed so that you can build the first floor and the second floor in a 76-foot footprint, which is the biggest thing you can move down an interstate. And it's the biggest thing that can fit on our big jig tables in our factory. So when we think about that, we're looking at a product line development versus a custom product for an individual buyer. And that allows us to think about even sheet utilization and standardizing across product lines and products. And so we think about it as who is the end customer, what is their needs, and then how are we delivering that need most efficiently.
Follow-up question. This is going back to Load King, right? So and people may not remember this, back in my earlier days, we had a chain that we were launching in a coffee chain. And so we actually met Howard Schultz because we were buying his Emeryville factory, which was one of his first roasting plants, which before that was, I'm going to blank on the guy's name now. Anyway, but the thing with Starbucks, and not a lot of people know this, is that they really kind of, they created that third place, right? And so it was about dark colors, dark woods, feeling comfortable as opposed to like a McDonald's where it was all bright colors, hard surfaces. They wanted to get you in and out. They're trying to get table flips, right? Starbucks, they wanted you to come and hang out, right? And hopefully you'd buy two coffees.
Right, right.
But can you talk a little bit about like with Low King and the things that you learned from working with Starbucks in terms of creating third place or hominess or warmth? How did that influence some of your design for your models?
Well, and you nailed it. The idea that Starbucks had was not just about coffee. They were much less of a coffee shop than they were the third place, right? They talked about that a ton and creating an environment, much like the pub was back in Europe, is the place that people want to go hang out and they feel connected and they feel like they can relax. And so Starbucks was amazing about that. And I think it translates into Toyota's really great about this as well, is everything starts with the customer and what the customer's needs are, especially in housing, right? How are you creating a home that that someone is proud to live in, an affordable home that someone's proud to live in, and it doesn't feel like a stepping stone to another house, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I think in our mission statement we talk about, you know, high quality and architecturally interesting is it's something I would be proud to live in, and it's architecturally interesting. So another way of saying beautiful or pleasing or aesthetic. So yeah, I mean, I think Starbucks was the champion of that for so long and really changed that whole industry.
Yeah. The other thing I just noticed when we were down there too, just one quick note, was covered porches and the fact that you're bringing people out to the street, kind of a Jan Gehl planner, you know, approach to that. And that's how you really get that interplay where there's a place for people to hang out and get to meet each other. Yeah. So I acknowledge you guys for doing that as
well,
too.
Yeah, and how you talked about the mailboxes and all the things you did to create chemistry in a community.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was a very fun and a creative part of designing the site plan, is because, you know, what we thought about, and we really stole some of this from Starbucks as well, was creating unscheduled interactions with other people, right? So in a neighborhood, how do I see my neighbors consistently, but I'm not calling them up for dinner? I just see them at the mailbox, or I'm always on my front porch or the green spaces. And so you kind of create a natural way to build a neighborhood.
Yeah, so we just did a podcast with the founder of Trade Hounds, and I had never heard of what Trade Hounds was. Shout out to my Art of Construction team and the Warrior podcast that we're doing of getting into the people that make construction work. So David Broom had talked about the evolution we talked to of his pub theory or his pub degree, where he was at with his uncle that was a painter, and he's like, and they were talking through this social media and this stuff, and he's like, well, you meet people through LinkedIn. He's like, what the fuck's LinkedIn? And he's like, and so that was the story on that podcast. You can go listen, that became Trade Hounds, that this is this place for the people that are proud workers of doing what they do and of putting the craft out there. So what I'm getting at, Tribe, is you have to know your audience. And Charlie, I'd love for you to tell the story that was tongue-in-cheek, but I can tell it's one of your favorite stories, when we got to go tour your first house. That talk about a proud moment for all of us to go be walking through a house that wasn't just something else that you weren't, that you built it. But we got to the kitchen, which is the heart of the home. And I made the comment of nice countertops. And Matt said, well, how do you source your countertops? And you told the story about the riches and the niches of, as long as you like this with the countertops.
Yeah. So this goes back to product development and creating efficiencies throughout the whole value stream. And for us, we have a saying, we have two major objectives: radical reduction of site work, so that we can do anything we do everything in the factory that we can and eliminate what has to happen at the site. And then the second is radical reduction of part numbers. Part numbers are the bane of every manufacturing system. And so for what we are doing with affordable, high quality housing is, we standardize at a higher level quality, but then are able to do that consistently at a lower cost than maybe cheaper materials. So countertops is one of the things we have. We offer one countertop, a white quartz countertop, and that's it. As opposed to some of our, some other builders might have 9 or 10 laminate color options. We only offer one. So it's higher quality. No one's offended by white quartz that I know of. If you're listening to this and you are, send me an email. But I haven't heard of anybody yet that doesn't want to buy a home that has white quartz in it. And our ability to standardize that allows us to get to a really efficient price point and offer that to everyone who buys our homes.
Well, it's a little surprising to me because I heard that you guys actually had two options, white and vanilla. But...
But that stuff is the serious part of, like, if you're trying to do attainable housing, and the word attainable can be spun many different directions, you have to put stuff in a box that makes sense for financial purposes. But, you know, there's so many different directions we can go, and we're, you know, as we get to close this thing out, you know, first off, like, this moment in time, like, how proud, like, super cool that you said, I'm going to do this plan, and someone says, Charlie, you should do a factory. I've met a lot of people in construction that it says, this is broken and we should do something different about it. And it's much easier to just keep doing it the same way. So kudos on you for
Thanks, Devin. I don't know, brave and stupid are really close together. So I'm not going to claim which side we were on yet. So,
well, as we close this thing out, what is next for Fading West? As, correct me if I'm wrong, you talked, you know, over 100,000 square feet that you built this factory. Talk through, you know, what is next and what do you think should be next based on where we're at today?
Yeah, I mean, we started the production in November, and probably for the next 2 or 3 months, we're still focused on just all the startup headaches. It's training, it's all the details of the construction drawings and supplier interactions. And so that's probably the biggest, you know, our focus for the next few months is definitely streamlining this, our internal processes. The next thing is the fact that the demand for housing right now and the crisis of affordable housing in Colorado is really what our mission is all about, is to have a significant impact on that lack of housing. And by most estimates, Colorado's short over 200,000 homes right now. And if you think our factory might be able to produce, you know, between 600 and 700 homes a year, but let's just call it, let's say we got to 1,000. It would take us 200 years to supply the deficit that exists right now in the state. So this next year, we're going to be focused on how do we scale up from this facility and add more capacity.
Fascinating. On the way in, you were talking about where were you yesterday and what's on the docket from what you were working on for helping move this thing forward.
Yeah,
cash is king, right? Somewhere you got to have, because financing in the past, it wasn't long ago, is like the M word is you can't even get financing for it.
Absolutely. I mean, we worked on the factory for 3 years, and it took us probably 2 years to get funding. And so the interesting thing that is becoming obviously the housing crisis has become an issue everywhere, and it's probably on the top of most politicians' minds right now. And so the state of Colorado just is passing a bill, Colorado 1082 is the bill, to help provide low interest rate loans for modular factories that are being willing to be built in the state and allocate a portion of their capacity for affordable housing. So I got to go speak to the Senate Subcommittee on Housing and tell them about the impact of this bill, and it was a surreal experience. I got to speak in front of a bunch of politicians, which is not something I was ever expecting to do. It was really fun. And there's a ton of support. And so the Colorado is, I think it goes to the Senate next for approval. And the House approved it. So it's exciting.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to hear this all coming together. But zooming out, as every one of these podcasts and all the kindling from these Fireside Chats of putting this together, make sure my call to action, Tribe, is go back. We're going to package this together, but every one of these podcasts are their own stories, right? But all of our stories has to fit into a bigger picture that we're branding as System Build Lifestyle. Because if every one of the time I turn these mic on, it's like 10 aha moments, but how do they link together, right? And you've said it off air, on air. It's like it takes a whole tribe to come together to make meaningful change, and stepping up to the mic, like scary, but good to move that needle, right? But the part I want to ask you of what you've jumped into this thing, this question we ask everybody onto the podcast, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology around system-built construction?
So going forward, the driving factor in all of these discussions is the fact that the United States right now is over 7 million housing units short. And the problem and the scale of that issue has to be looked at in more creative ways. Obviously, that's why we're here, right? We're talking about changing fundamentally how construction happens and how these products are delivered to the end buyer. And so, you know, what I look forward to seeing is more of an integration between what has really worked well in construction and what's really worked well in manufacturing, and seeing those two blending together. And it's a challenge for each of us because we're all coming from different perspectives. I come from manufacturing, others come from construction. And then that, what you're creating is this group of people who want to work together and figure out how to do this most efficiently. And so looking forward in technology, it has to go towards more of an automotive-based construction methodology. It can't stay the old way. Just because you're losing By some estimates, 42% of the current construction workforce is retiring in the next 10 years. I mean, this is a massive crisis that we're just at the beginning of. And so looking forward, it has to change pretty radically. And all of us have to work on it. This is not a competitive environment. This is, we need to help each other and share our best practices and ideas. And I think that's what's so fun about what you're doing.
Well said. And the last question for you here is that we, at the first 50 podcasts, we always said this podcast is for contractors and architects because they're two of the critical things that make construction happen, right? And we went through this whole evolution and we changed it, the Art of Construction podcast, specifically designed for contractors and its affiliates. And we settled on the word affiliates for this very reason as we're sitting at the table today, because it's somebody like you that came from lean manufacturing and learning branding strategies from a Starbucks principles and philosophies to integrating them into construction as an affiliate. And so it's, I ask this question all the time, but we have to get into the riches and the niches. And the riches and the niches is, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about it, to go out there and crush it, to grow their business?
You know, I think it's that the collaboration and the stepping back from the traditional process where each of us was siloed in their own thing. So an architect does his thing and hands it to a general contractor. They do their thing, they hand it to a subcontractor. And each of those are pretty siloed. And so I would say that as we think about how to streamline this process and really make a significant impact on this crisis of affordable housing, for all of us to take a step back and look at that value stream as how do we play a part in that and how do we eliminate waste throughout the entire process? And that's kind of what I think about is how do I find the affiliates and the GCs and the material suppliers who want to be a part of thinking creatively about a lean value stream. At the end of the day, that's what the goal is.
Awesome. Well, Charlie, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. We're so proud of you. Let Matt and I just do a couple lessons learned and recaps for us, and we'll send us on our way and keep building better buildings together, right?
Devin, thanks for having me. This has been fun.
So Matt, the key word that I heard him say, it's reverse engineering this thing. They're in the business of efficient delivery of housing. And those word tracks really made me think about it, because you have to think about specifics in SQV, safety, quality, velocity. And I love it how the culture is all about making sure they're safe. They're putting out the best quality they can, but the velocity is that third leg of the stool where you actually do this thing called the art of moving money, which is speed to market. And that's what we're all trying to figure out right now. But let's not forget, let's begin with the end in mind and making sure we're being safe to have as much fun as possible, and that we're not putting something out there that we're not proud of in the quality. And I think about this picture track, and I got the pleasure of going to see this factory, and I didn't quite get the U shape. And it was really fun for me to hear about these 16 stations. But boy, did I see that as a startup of the different sections there, as owning a window and door company, of seeing the evolution of just that part into all the 16 stations, to where you have to think very differently about just in time, when right now the world is in a crisis about just in time, when that's quite frankly the only way this is going to work, is all 16 stations have to become one. And so that becomes the radical reduction of site work and parts. That is what we're all trying to figure out in the art of construction. That good on fading West, the emerging West through Charlie and his team. What a cool story to see us of the evolution of coming together. Close us out, Matt.
Yeah, so I was thinking about it. If Charlie was a superhero, right, he would be SQV man. But I don't know that that can all fit like on tights on his chest. But I think, you know, in a serious way, what I really want to say is, if anybody's listening to this podcast that's a developer, there's two words: transformative and passion. And that the big kudo to Charlie is that he was willing to be whoever he needed to be in his new adopted community. And at first that was developer, you know, then it was realtor. But really it's community builder. And I think that can be a lesson to real estate developers, is that you're not coming in. Profit obviously is important. You're not nonprofits, but what's important is building community and providing a service for those people to live in that community. And Charlie has done an incredible job of that. And we look forward at Art of Construction to working with him in future communities.
Awesome. So. Gold, make sure you're listening to all these podcasts, because it's not just a 1 hour and you can go build a factory or a developer listening to this. There's a lot. It's just much more complicated than you think. But you better pay attention to the people that are making this change, because this is where it's going. Thank you, Charlie and team. We're big fans. Crush it out there, tribe.